See how good
I like this. So, yeah, I think you're doing this on purpose to make me feel at ease, so I appreciate it.
Nice. Yeah, no, we're normally dorks like this.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's what makes this podcast so good.
Okay, all right.
Because we're dorks. Good company then.
All right, welcome to the 7th episode of Podcast for Good. We are rolling along with yet another issue that is topical in every way, environmental issues. We're going to break down some statistics. We're going to talk a little bit about the environment overall. Our first person will be Julian Matthews from an organization called Nimi Poo, Protecting the Environment.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious to find out what that word means.
Yes, yeah. So he's on a tribal-affiliated nonprofit out in the east.
Yeah, eastern Washington area.
That'd be good. A little geographic diversity.
I like it.
Yeah, and then the next one will be, after that, we'll talk Harbor Wild Watch, super cool organization, the executive director, Lindsay Stover. So full disclosure, the first conversation with Nimi Poo was done on the phone.
Yeah.
And the conversation with Lindsay Stover is done in person. So we're playing games with mics today. We're doing a little audio fun.
We are.
Yeah.
Fun with audio.
First time. Yes, fun with audio.
Yeah. I like that?
Yeah, that was good. Nice little throwback here and there. So this is the first time we're going to do that. So I am Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the CFD. As always,
my co-host. I am Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the CFD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are, of course, going to talk today, as I said, about environmental issues. I really feel like, and I kind of said this before, I really feel like this issue is debated in a completely incorrect way.
Yeah, it is also a massive thing. Yeah. So it's not like you can say environment, yeah, and then, like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's air, there's water, there's land, there's people.
All
like, it just, yeah, there's a lot.
We debate environmental impact a lot of times on data points.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in 100 years, it'll be 7 extra degrees Fahrenheit, right?
Yeah.
And everyone goes, okay, it's 100 years from now, and I won't be here.
But yeah, like, what
does
that even
mean? And 7 degrees? Like,
yeah,
you know? You know, it was 7 degrees less yesterday, and 7 degrees more tomorrow.
Well, yeah, or like, the oceans will rise by an inch. Okay,
yeah,
but what does that mean?
Right, what does
I don't
that
get
mean?
It.
I personally have been able to mingle with two charities, you in talking with Harbor Wild Watch.
Yeah.
I feel like these charities have a finger on the pulse much better than maybe that style of debate.
Yeah.
Which is, here is tangible environmental impact of what we do to the environment.
Yeah, like what we see happening every day.
Yeah.
The things that we work on every day. And yeah, the impact that's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
That's clear, like the clear changes, you know? Like if you see photographs of, say, like Mount Rainier in 1963, and then you see a photograph of Mount Rainier now, and you look at, okay, well, here's differences
the
in the snow cap and the ice. And, yeah, what changes? Like how's the landscape different?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seeing these differences is, I think, something that has to be shared.
Exactly.
More than like
more than what's going on right now.
Data points that,
I
don't know,
they
just don't seem too tangible.
Let's talk about what types of environments make up our own local area.
Yeah. So we're in Olympia, and here we have access to Puget Sound. Like, it is a massive waterway. Hmm. So the water that comes into Puget Sound, like, we get from an ocean, we get the sound itself, and then we have rivers here. Like, I was looking up some stats about rivers. Columbia River is the biggest, and then the Snake River is a big river. But the Columbia River, apparently, it is second in the country to the Mississippi for how many gallons of water flow through.
Oh, no way.
I had no idea.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So if, say, the Columbia River is polluted at some point,
because
there are definitely spaces in the river where you're not supposed to be because it's not safe, then, you know, like, that affects everything that flows downriver from there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have tons of water. Rivers, lakes, oceans, and then we have a mountain range that's massive just right down the middle of our state with active volcanoes.
Yeah.
People kind of forget that sometimes because it's just mountains, right? So we have mountain range in western Washington at the Olympics, and then the Cascades with the active volcanoes. But between western Washington and eastern Washington, we have temperate rainforests in the
very cool.
Really? Super cool, right? Yeah. So the Quinault Valley, Queets Valley, the Hoh Valley, and the Bogachiel Valley mm-hmm. are where temperate rainforests are located in western Washington. Mm-hmm. And then we don't have a technical desert in eastern Washington, but there are arid conditions that mimic desert. Yeah. So it's you go from one extreme to another. Yeah. So if like you're in Olympia, you can go to a major city, mm-hmm. you can go to the beach, you can go to a volcano, you can go to a rainforest or something that's like a desert.
Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Right?
That's really cool.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what makes our state pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Freakishly spectacular, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
And then I was looking up some stats about, like, flora and fauna.
Okay. You know, ooh, right? Flora and fauna.
I know, right? The twins from Adam's Family.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with me.
That's a dated reference.
I know, right? Whatever. Halloween's coming and Morticia Adams is amazing.
Yeah, there you go. That's
my story.
Okay.
Sticking to it.
Sure, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So there are more than 1,300 plant species that have been identified in Washington State.
Wow.
So, I mean, you go outside and you're like, look, trees and bushes, oh, rhododendrons, great.
Yeah.
Now there's like 1,300 different species, which is pretty insane. And then in April 2006, it was determined that 27 animal species between like vertebrates and invertebrates mm-hmm. were listed as threatened or endangered in Washington. So there's 27. So like you think, okay, like it's got to be eagles and things, right?
Right.
Humpback whales, 8 species of salmon.
Wow.
The white-tailed deer, Colombian white-tailed deer is an animal species that's threatened. And part of that, you know, has got to do with, like, wildfires.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are, like, we always have fire season now, so that's never going to change.
Right. Yeah, that was one thing. That sort of stuff was interesting when we volunteered at the Nisqually Land Trust because their whole thing was we're going to be pulling Himalayan blackberry bushes.
Yeah. Right?
And I was like, how in the hell do I know the difference between a Himalayan blackberry bush and the indigenous blackberry bush?
Exactly.
Right? And the best way you could describe it is, well, the Himalayan blackberry bush has this brown sort of stem that comes out of it.
Yeah.
And bushes that are indigenous have green. So that was the only way, that was the only real way you could actually tell the difference. And, like, they had 3 leaves. But it's like, in that one area, you had like 3 different versions of just blackberries.
How crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Had no idea that there were different ones. I knew that, like, hey, those are blackberries, right. And they grow, and you can't get rid of them if you leave them, you know?
FYI, the blackberries that take things over are usually Himalayan, and they're not indigenous to this area.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. But that's sort of stuff you learn when you actually talk to people who are trying to be stewards of the environment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and now, those are just, to me, much more like, okay, if I do X thing, this could go away.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like, if the debate begins to get framed like that, I mean, keep the other stuff, obviously. That sort of information is very important. But I also think, bring it very personal. Bring it to people in their backyards, in their homes.
Yeah.
Show them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when you were talking about Himalayan blackberries, like, I just pictured, like, Sir Edmund Hillary, you know, with his Sherpa.
Right.
Like, Tenzing Norgay's up there, and he's like, you know, this blackberry bush, you should probably take it home. It will flower, and you'll have blackberries for the rest of your life.
He's like, this is fantastic. I should bring this home. There's not enough blackberry bushes in Washington State.
Exactly. I don't know where he's from, you know, but, like, he's from Washington now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's from Washington now.
He's from we've made him from Washington.
You're welcome.
Yeah, not even close, probably.
Yeah. According to Environment Washington, in Washington State, there are 2 billion, with a B, plastic bags distributed.
Annually. We don't even think about that anymore in Thurston County.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, since I work in Thurston County, it's one of those things where I have, like, reusable bags in my trunk, you know? But, like, it gets to be something where I use it even when I'm home.
Have you ever gone to, like, a grocery store, like, in Lewis County, or if you go to, like, even Pierce County, and they're like, would you like a bag? And they bust out plastic, and you're almost like, oh
yeah,
I don't think we can do that, actually.
Kind of panicky, yeah.
I think that's illegal.
Yeah.
You should put that plastic bag away.
Yeah, like, I think I'm to the point, too, where, like, if like, I'm drinking something out of a plastic or a glass bottle, right? Like, well, where should I put this? Oh, in the trash. what?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Yeah. Why would you do that?
I love it, though. It conditions people in a different way. Very and also, much. I mean, have we really missed the plastic bag in Thurston County?
I don't think so.
I don't think we
have. No. It's kind of funny if you see people who are walking out of the store who've refused to pay the 5 cents for, like, a paper bag, and they're just, like, trying to carry all their stuff.
Right. My mom, by the way, still has, like, she has, like, 78 plastic bags in the back of her.
Is she saving them?
She, like, when she goes to Fred Meyer, for example, and we're getting out of the car, and she's like, oh, did you bring any bags? I'm like, no, I didn't. And she's like, no problem, I have bags. She reaches in and she grabs out. She has this stack of, like, those wrinkly plastic bags. Yeah. And I'm like, Mom, what is happening here? Just spend the 99 cents and get, like, a cloth bag.
Yeah.
Right? And she's like, no. So she busts out bags.
She's just refusing.
She flat refuses. I don't pay fees and I don't pay fines, she always says. So she's like, no. And so she grabs, like, a Target bag. We're shopping in Fred Meyer, Mom.
Doesn't matter. It's plastic. It's a plastic bag.
It'll work, right?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. So plastic bags are a big pollutant if they get into the environment.
Sure.
Like, you find fish and animals that have plastic bags or pieces of plastic that, you know, are digested, and that's not good for anybody.
No, right.
Because if you're going to eat a salmon and the salmon's eating
plastic, that's not good for you.
No.
Yeah.
So in our state, we have some principal air pollutants. Particulate emissions, carbon monoxide, hydrocarbons, lead, and dioxides of nitrogen. So fuel combustion and industrial processes. Mm-hmm. Those are really like the particulate emissions and carbon monoxide. But then transportation, so cars.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive, you have pollutants that come out of your car.
Right.
But since 1988, they had measured days of air quality that didn't meet standards for health.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, there were 25 days.
Mm-hmm.
In 1994, there were 15.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1999, there were 7.
Hey,
so like
we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, nationally, I'm curious to see what kind of standards there are.
Right.
I'm sure like with states, different states, like
this
is Department of Ecology numbers.
Oh, okay.
So it's not that.
Probably translates different to other states.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is also mind-blowing, right? Because the air doesn't stop at Washington State, the
Exactly, yeah.
You have to have federal standards on these things.
Exactly.
And I think if Washington State does a good job, it almost means nothing if
neighbors
aren't
just
doing
like
the same
stop,
thing.
Yeah.
Right.
The air in 1990, more than 2 million people in our state were exposed to air that violated federal standards.
Uh-huh.
But by 1999, the number had been reduced to 112,000 people.
Very cool.
So it's a great reduction. There's still 112,000 people who are being exposed to toxic air or just, you know, really polluted air, but it's a definite improvement.
That's cool.
In Washington State, there are 6,500 sites that are suspected or confirmed to be contaminated with toxic chemicals.
Wow.
Hanford has about 1,500 places.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, so Hanford's a big one. And then we do have one of the highest overall recycling rates.
Hey, now!
So, yeah, it's one of those ingrained thing.
Yes.
Guess what the first city in Washington was that had a stateside or a curbside recycling program? What city?
Olympia?
No.
Auburn?
No.
Tacoma?
No.
Who?
Bellingham.
Bellingham?
The Beeham.
Wow.
Yeah, way to go, Bellingham.
Way to go, Bellingham. Where's
so,
step up?
Because they had successful programs,
sure.
Seattle was like, we need it.
Yeah.
So they got it. Yeah, and then there was a clear, solid waste management strategy that was passed by the legislature in 1989 called Waste Not Washington Act.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay, so they had set a recycling goal of 50%, and what they wanted to do was like get 50% of all things that were going into the garbage into recycling. So it hadn't been achieved as of 2003.
Uh-huh.
It's probably still, I don't know, I've not seen anything different.
Sure.
But, like, the rate for recycling in 1995 was 40%, so it got up there.
Cool.
So hopefully, you know, we are getting a little better about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think the other thing that people fail to realize, actually with a ton of our charities, is that, real change, honest-to-goodness change, is generational.
Yeah.
It is not something that we wake up the next day and we'll nail all this stuff.
Yeah. Boom.
Right?
Done.
You have to make it so that your kids don't know any different than what the current environment is. And that's, I think, a lot of times people maybe get down about issues, or they feel like there's not enough movement, yeah, or that sort of thing. And you have faith that if you're this is like the groundwork you're putting in,
yeah,
so that your kid wakes up one day and doesn't know that they even did plastic bags at the grocery stores and stuff like that. It wasn't even an option.
It'd be one of those things where like your kid's like, wait a minute, really?
Right. You guys did plastic bags? That's ridiculous. That could kill the environment. Right? Then, yeah. So if you can do that, then, you know, I mean, we're in the mode where, mm-hmm, we are the sort of generation right now that is changing it. And the change stuff becomes really hard.
Yeah.
But you get to a certain point where you just wake up and, like, the change happened over time and things are just different.
Yeah, and you might realize it, like, in one of those, mm-hmm, oh, wow, you wake up and you realize it, but it's something that you're taking part in every day.
Exactly, exactly. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and Washington is really high as far as water quality and soil quality.
Sweet!
Like, we're apparently right behind Connecticut, number two in the country for our water quality.
Who even likes Connecticut?
I don't know. Connecticutians?
Connecticutians?
Sure.
I don't know. Whatever, Connecticut.
Connecticutians. I don't know.
I don't even know how to... Connecticut. You didn't even spell your place right.
No. That's how I learned to spell it.
I'm sure that's probably actually a Native American thing, so I apologize in advance.
You better apologize.
I didn't mean that. Whatever. Connecticut, you're great. You're great people. Salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth.
Connecticutans.
Yeah, and then our soil quality. Apparently, we're tied for first with five states: Michigan, Minnesota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and us.
Boy, the Midwest really nails that, huh?
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Go NFC North.
That's right. Go NFC North.
Cool. Well, that's excellent.
Yeah, right? So we are doing well as far as, like, you know, Washingtonians being stewards, mm-hmm, of the environment, right, who are active participants.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
So that's a good thing to be proud of.
That's very cool. Yeah. That's very cool. Now?
Now.
Now, the question of the podcast.
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. So hit me with it.
All right. Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
So you're familiar with Dr. Seuss, I take it?
I am. Yeah. That's correct. I have three children, so that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Green Eggs and Ham,
Green
Blue
Eggs
Fish.
And Ham, Sam I Am. Mm-hmm. What's the other one? Cat in the Hat.
The Lorax.
The Lorax.
I don't know if you know this, but the Lorax speaks for the trees have no tongues.
I did know this. I did know this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so if you could be a tree, whether you speak or not,
okay,
what tree would you be?
Okay, so I thought about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people's answer would be like, I'd be an oak, I think.
I don't know why that was so funny.
I would be like, because it's strong.
Sure, sure.
It lasts the time. I would be, I think, bamboo. I'd be bamboo.
Okay, why would you be bamboo?
Okay, so let me tell you about bamboo. Bamboo's exotic.
Yeah.
I feel like if you ever see bamboo in like your yard, we had bamboo shoot up in our yard.
We had bamboo once too.
And I was like, oh my gosh. It's like totally different than any other tree around.
Where did this come from?
This is totally original, right? Because it's not indigenous to where we live.
Yeah.
So you're like, what the?
Yeah.
Right? It's also a little known fact that it's one of the strongest woods, mm-hmm, you know, in the world.
Yeah.
And also pandas really love to eat it. And I think pandas are cute.
So you'd be like,
so I'd get to be more by pandas.
Panda, come eat me. that's where you're going?
Jeez. I feel like it'd be more like I get to hang out with pandas. Maybe I would be one that they liked more because I get to speak now.
Yeah.
I guess, right?
If you
those
want.
Are the general rules. Okay, so I think I'll be.
You don't have to.
Okay, so that'd be me. I'd be a talking bamboo tree.
So you think that the pandas would not be freaked out by the fact that you're talking to them?
Because we'd be friends. We'd be buddies.
Hey, panda. Hey, panda, come
over. I wouldn't be that creepy.
Hey.
Hey, buddy.
Hey. I like it.
Well, what about you? What tree would you be?
So, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Drop Dead Gorgeous from the 90s.
Holy cow. I mean, I may have seen it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
Okay, well, I do because there were a lot of one-liners.
Okay.
And, like, you know, it's based in Minnesota,
mm-hmm,
so the accents are really
they're fantastic.
Oh, crap. Yeah. Like, it's great. The movie is basically, like, all these teenage girls are competing to be the Miss whatever their town, then going to be Miss Minnesota, and then possibly Miss USA for this particular pageant, right? And during the interview questions, one of the questions is, if you could be any kind of tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Okay.
So the girl who's obsessed with dogs, and like particular, I think they were all dachshunds, wiener dogs, right? She's obsessed with them.
Sure.
Her immediate answer is, dogwood? So,
okay.
My answer just for that is just wide-eyed, dogwood?
Okay.
I like it. Yeah.
Dogwood. Okay, let's go ahead and kick it off with Julian Matthews from Mimi Poo, Protecting the Environment. Okay, so we are on the phone with Julian Matthews, the treasurer. It's called Mimi Poo, Protecting the Environment. Julian, why don't you walk us through, first of all, what your name means?
Mimi Poo means the people, so that's one of the names that we went by. There's some others that are longer, but that's essentially...
I like it. So can you give us a little history about how you guys were created and when you were founded and sort of maybe some reasons why you guys were founded?
There's been some travel markets, like we've been doing stuff, you know, since way back, like maybe 15, 20 years ago, but we were never really organized. And then what happened, we had the big Highway 12 Megalos protest. That was where the council went down on the highway and did that blockade of those evaporators. They called it ExxonMobil, I believe, at the time. It was trying to run through Highway 12 up into Canada and to be used at the tar sands, where they use these the equipment they use to kind of screen out, they mix the water in the tar sands to get the tar out, and they shoot that all over and make oil out of it and stuff. And so what we wanted to do was kind of capture that energy of the people, particularly with the tribal members, to capture that energy, to keep it going, to look at other issues and ways that we could also assist, whether within our treaty area or with other tribes, like whether it's Standing Rock Sioux or the Alberta Tar Sands,
right,
or Beaver Creek First Nations up there, where we could work and develop some energy and some education and some training to help our people to be more in tune with environmental issues. Then we started having tribal environmental summits, like in different kind of meetings.
Right.
But it's coming along pretty good.
Awesome. One of the things that we pride ourselves on doing in these podcasts is kind of getting beyond sort of the empty talking points, if you will, of issues that go around. So you brought up Standing Rock, which is clearly something that out here there are folks who have opinions on. When you see that stuff on TV, right, it stops at a certain point. It has a shelf life on TV, and then there's nothing else after that. So you guys sound like you dive in a little bit more beyond just the activism, and you're actually out there educating folks. Does that reach beyond just tribal members? I mean, how integrated are you there?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we work with, with the Three of the Snakes, Wotilla. Well, I guess I go back to the point you're making, and that was one thing. It's just like you're saying, it's like on the news, you know, they'll do it. Standing Rock is pretty big, you know, but then everyone, in my opinion, not necessarily true, go about their business.
Right.
That's over. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. But it's kind of more like what we're trying to do is, like, with that Highway 12 thing, is like keep that momentum going.
Yeah.
And just don't, because those issues are coming up. It's like with the dam removal, you know, dam breaching, removal, whatever. Those salmon are still dying, and then they try all these different mechanisms to kill more sea lions, which is ridiculous to me. But they're not trying to deal with the problem. It's just kind of keeping these political political
right conversations
action
going that don't
right
actually
yeah
end
like
up helping.
It sounds good to restore salmon, and we're doing it, and all these hatcheries, but that kind of goes off of what we're doing, is keeping people informed about what's happening, because, like, even around here, like with the Lewiston Tribune or some of the newspapers, they don't really talk about the issues that are going on right now. You know, it's kind of like climate change is kind of, like, to me, losing its momentum. You know, and because it's not on the news, and so those types of issues are really important, like for us with the salmon and the water and the reservoirs and the Columbia Treaty with Canada, because all that affects the water and the climate change, all part of it. Trying to do is, besides networking, is to keep people motivated to continue to look at whether it's Standing Rock or the dams or, you know, the oil terminals in Vancouver or wherever, Lummi Tribe, that type of thing. So we're trying to keep that focused and not let people, it's over now, so
yeah, it strikes me that those cycles, like, that's why they call them cycles, because they pop up, people get activated, and then they lose a sense of where they're supposed to go after that, and so they move on to the next thing. And so it seems like momentum is finite where you guys come from.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed. It's kind of like with our group.
Why do you think conservation is important to Washington State?
Well, mainly because we have to protect the water, land, and the air for the future. And I think with a lot of it is, to me, I'm a Washington resident, and so I see a lot of things going on that, like, particularly with the oil terminals, and it seems like we don't really have a lot of input in these decisions. And I think that's one thing, like, that goes along with the civic engagement of, you know, people to make sure that, and I know we can't always have a say in every action, but we should have a say in what happens to our water, mm-hmm. what happens to our land, what happens to the fish, what happens to the wildlife. But it seems sometimes, unless people get directly involved, mm-hmm. it's really limited, you know, because people
Right. Really
kill some more wolves up in Northeast Washington or Oregon. So how did they do that, or why did they do that? I think it's just having better conservation is important because we want to protect what we have.
Yeah.
Essentially with the tribe, like with our treaty rights, like Washington, Idaho, Oregon, some Montana, we want to protect that, not, you know, just because we own it or anything, but protect the habitat, the water, and that type of thing.
What do you think the biggest environmental concern you see working with NIMIPOO protecting the environment currently is?
I would say the water issues, because the thing is water affects everything.
Right.
It's like the oil terminals, you know, they're near the river because they need to ship it. The fish are being impacted. They need water. We need water, you know, because it's also like up at the Otter. I went to Gonzaga and grew up in Coeur d'Alene before I went to the Navy. So that aquifer is always a big deal. And water is really critical because humans need water.
I mean,
air and, you know, land is really important, but it's what goes into the land that will go into the water.
Right.
I think water is probably the most important for us humans and animals.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking we were talking with another organization who helps protect the Nisqually River over here on this side. And one of the things he talked about that I think resonated with me is the idea that, you know, we're basically one or two seasons away from having extinct species of salmon. Is that something you guys are seeing as well?
Yeah, just like this year, we fish, and, you know, it's kind of like they told a lot of environmental friendly reason why we want to see the salmon come back through. We want to catch and eat them. You know, some people sell them, I don't sell them, I eat them, but like for kind of traditional meal or food. But like right now, the salmon are really bad. The runs are terrible. And, you know, it's kind of like they say the same thing, like climate change. Oh, it's a fluctuation in the climate. It's a fluctuation. Oh, there's smolts that are coming back and things like that. But realistically, you know, it's really, because they're endangered already. Like a lot of the salmon runs are already endangered. So what's next, you know?
And
people don't seem to really think like that, you know, because there's some species of animals that are extinct, but, you know, to me, we shouldn't think like that. We should think to protect them and preserve them.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, totally agree. Let's say somebody decides that they want to donate to you guys through the CFD. What do donations do for your guys' organization?
They mainly help with certain expenditures, and then we might have honorariums for a speaker. Like, say, if you get some tribal elder comes from Yakima or along the Columbia River to come and talk, or different, you know, maybe general, some operating expenses. We don't have a lot, but... And then the educational part of it, like the materials that we get, and, you know, maybe movie costs that they're charged. Like if you show a movie, sometimes you have to pay a certain amount to show that and things like that. So it's mainly and, you know, we're pretty accountable. I'm the one that does the books and stuff. We have the bookkeeper and stuff, and we do all the reports.
So you had mentioned you have an event coming up this weekend. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What's that? It's called the Free the Snake Flotilla. And what it is it's the third one that we've been having, and the purpose of it is to push for mainly the kind of getting the word about the need to remove the four lower Snake River dams along this between here and down by the down by the Utila area. And so what we're doing is we have So speakers on Friday night, there's going to be some Alan Dinkinson, Michelle, and a bunch of other, some other tribal elders coming to talk about their experiences of when the salmon were there before the dams and that type of thing, and the impact they had on the culture, on their lives, their family lives, and their tribes here and down along the Columbia, because it affects all of us. And then Saturday, we're going to have a big flotilla partners. Last year, there were like 300 boats, canoes, kayaks, have some speakers and events there, and just to get people knowledgeable a lot about the salmon runs and what's happening with them. And so it should be pretty major.
Awesome. Well, I think that's what we got. Julian, we really appreciate you coming on and talking to us a little bit about what you guys do.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate you having me do the podcast.
If you're a donor who qualifies for retirement, we have a change in policy that may affect you. Starting on October 1st, 2017, the CFD is adopting a new policy that automatically continues any recurring payroll contributions current state employees may have into their retirement. Retiring donors will be able to cancel, add, or modify any donations before their separation date or any time during their retirement through the CFD online system, or even by contacting the state CFD office and making a request with one of our staff members. If you have any questions about this new policy, we urge you to please contact the state CFD office at 360-902-4162 or email us anytime at cfd@sos.wa.gov. Again, this change is for donors who are qualifying for retirement. We really appreciate your patience in this matter, and hopefully you'll continue giving to us. Thanks a lot.
So we're here with the Executive Director of Harbor Wild Watch, Lindsay Stover. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Heather. Thank you very much, Philip, for having me.
Yeah. Welcome. So we'll get right into it. Can you give us a little history about Harbor Wild Watch?
Yeah, so Harbor Wild Watch is a nonprofit based in the Gig Harbor area of Pierce County. Our mission is to inspire stewardship for Puget Sound. And we really do that by providing unique learning opportunities for youth, families, and adults to really get them thinking about the resources in Puget Sound, how important they are to our community, and inspire them to want to be better stewards for the environment.
Cool.
Yeah.
You hit on it a little bit, but what are some of the things that your organization does for the community?
Yeah, so we our programs are sort of two-pronged. We have youth programs and our public programs. Mm-hmm. So for our public programs, we do about 200 of them a year, and they include, in the summertime, beach walks at some of our local state parks to teach people about the tidal habitats and the different animals that live in that really harsh beach environment where it's really hard to survive.
Yeah.
And we use an acronym, GUEST, to teach people how to be a good steward. So, mm-hmm. you know, gently walk, step lightly, all mm-hmm. these different things to remember how to be good guests because we're in their home, right?
Yeah.
So we have beach walks in the summertime. We have salmon tours in the spring and the fall when the salmon are actually running up the creek. So we can have adults, families, kids see exactly salmon going up the creek, that really tough battle that they have going upstream and spawning right there in front of their eyes, which is an incredible experience. So, you know, even the adults that we have on those programs, they're going, I'm going to look at salmon on my plate a little differently and appreciate, you know, this really tough journey that they made. We also have, in the wintertime, it's called Peer Into the Night, which is a really unique program that, you know, it takes people out of their element. So we have scuba divers that go into the water. It's at nighttime.
Oh, that's
in the,
cool.
You know, middle of the night, and they have an HD video camera.
Oh,
and there's
sweet.
A live feed to the surface.
Yeah.
So, you know, kids, adults, whoever, they're up top with their hot chocolate or their clam chowder, staying warm, dry, but they get to have the exact same experience that our divers do underneath the dock. So, I mean, it's bringing a virtual scuba diving experience to people who maybe are scared of Puget Sound because it's a little darker than you know, the tropical waters or not really sure how rich, nothing interesting could live down there, and they see a school of squid come by or a harbor seal that's wanting to play with our divers' fins or even a giant Pacific octopus, as you know, before. Yeah. So, you know,
I
want to
go on this thing.
It's very, very fun. And I want to make sure you know, too, that all these programs are free of charge. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we really want to get that information out to the community. So our goal is really to provide them with that education and the knowledge so that they can go home and be able to make an informed decision.
Yeah.
So those are kind of our public programs. We also have a facility in downtown Gig Harbor. Mm-hmm. That's a partnership with the city of Gig Harbor, and we have a public office space there with an interpretive exhibit. And so we have, cool. It's a $25,000 exhibit with a live underwater video camera of Gig Harbor Bay.
Oh, wow.
A augmented reality sandbox, which is really hard to describe. You have to come see it or check out our website, but it's basically a sandbox that you're able to play with and manipulate the sand, and it has a 3D projector and a very high-powered computer software system, and so it projects topographic lines and contours onto the sand, and then as you play with it, it changes in real time.
That's cool.
It's amazing. So, you know, you can look at, say, you know, an island. If this island were to go away, or, you know, looking at some of the things happening right now, flooding, if this barrier island was gone. This dune was gone, what would the effect be on the inland area? Exactly. So it's really looking at watershed issues. You can see all sorts of marine mammal skulls. You can play in a sandbox, look what's underneath Gig Harbor Bay. A lot of fun. Cool. We also have a 100-gallon touch tank in there with live marine animals. So lots to do.
Man. Yeah. I bet you get adults in there who are just like, I want to play in this sand.
They instantly turn eight.
Yeah. Yes. We even had a gentleman who, he was in the service, and I'm forgetting which branch he was in now, but he was talking about bringing some of his younger recruits here because they were struggling with topographic maps and how bringing them in to be able to see in real time, you know,
this
how it works.
This is what it looks like.
So that was one we weren't expecting.
Spectacular.
So that's about, you know, not quite half of our programs, 200 of our programs. 400 programs a year. We do about 600 total are just for youth.
Cool.
And so that primarily are classroom workshops. They're STEM-based, so science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. We have 20 different workshops that we give free of charge. They're designed to supplement the local curriculum. We work very closely with teachers and administrators to figure out what works well for their class, their specific needs. And, you know, we work with teachers who love science and just want to come have us in to do something really fun.
Sure.
That's our motto. Learn, have fun. Or we have sometimes teachers that are a little intimidated by science and want a little bit of help.
Yeah.
And so we can give them materials before and after as well to help them. So we're trying to be that sort of connector. We also have field trips that we take kids out on. So we want to have them learn that knowledge in the classroom and then be able to take it out into
and
the field.
Apply it.
Exactly. Nice. In a real world setting. Because we all know that that's the skills that these kids need to develop.
Yeah.
To be able to take that knowledge and apply it. So we do that. We also have a junior naturalist training program. We have a volunteer program for teens, so a lot of our programs are wrapped around youth.
That's really cool.
Gig Harbor, Pierce County, and Kitsap County.
So you guys are based out of Grace Harbor.
Pierce County, actually. Yes, Gig Harbor is just over the bridge from Tacoma.
And so, a lot of times people look at a charity that's based in a specific area and they go, "Well, I'm not going to give to it because it's based in that one area." But can you talk a little bit about how conservation is important for all of Washington State and how what you guys do impact far beyond just like the Pierce County area?
That's a really great question. And I've lived here my whole life except for I went to school in Florida. And, you know, so here in Washington, I think that a lot of times people are like, oh, the environment's all around us. Everybody knows about this. Everyone talks about recycling, all those great things.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I went to a different state where I was like, that's not normal. That doesn't happen everywhere else, you know, even though still in the state of Florida, you know, water's everywhere. It's beautiful. People are using it outside. But it's just not that same sentiment. But then, you know, moving back here, I saw that sentiment is there, but the action is not always a part of it.
Yeah.
So I, you know, our organization really believes that especially getting kids at a young age where they're, we use the animals as sort of the hook, you know. Kids love to see weird, gross animals doing strange things, you know, the slime from a moon snail or something like that. So we want to bring them in, get them hooked with the animals.
Yeah.
They learn to love these animals, and then we talk about, well, here's how you can help these animals survive, which a lot of time has to do with water quality.
Right.
And so really what we're trying to do is instill this lifelong stewardship message in these kids. So they understand that what the actions they take at home, at school, at work, not just now, but throughout their entire lives, even when they maybe move away from Pierce County, that is going to have a big effect on them.
Yeah.
Now, everybody that's on my staff was, including myself, was affected by an educator at some point in our lives, and that's why we do what we do.
Sure.
And so we want to be that you know, change in one of the youth's lives, to be able to inspire them to maybe go into the environmental education field or become a scientist or just be a good steward and, you know, take care of their home.
Cool.
What are some average steps that somebody can take to help conserve the environment.
Yeah. So there are some really simple things that you can do. I'm right now, I know you can't see me, but I have, and Heather does as well, our reusable water bottle, right? Yeah. Single-use plastic is a really big issue right now. There's several cities, even in the state, that are putting plastic bans on. We try and encourage people to bring their own bag. So we want them to bring it to the grocery store, to bring it to work, to do all those things. Bring your own containers, because the single-use plastic is one of the biggest issues that we have
right
now.
So reusing items as many times as you can and buying something that you can reuse.
Yep, reusing always is the best option.
Okay.
And then some other really simple things to do. We talk about people eating less meat. That's one thing you can do to help the environment. And we're not saying don't eat any meat, but there's a campaign called Meatless Monday where they encourage people to maybe one day a week don't eat meat, and it can help reduce some of those things that are affecting our climate.
Yeah.
In addition to that, there's things that you can do at home, like not using harmful pesticides or chemicals on your lawn. Something as simple, and Gig Harbor, there's a lot of waterfront homeowners. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people don't know that it's not good for the environment to dump your grass clippings right into the water. That's really harmful. It adds a lot of excess nutrients, and it's not good. But, if people don't know that, knowledge is the first step.
Right. Like, that should change the ecosystem for the water and then anything there. But if you don't think about that, then...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're thinking, it's natural. Yeah. It's going to go right
it's
back.
It's grass.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's a lot of things that maybe we see as kind of common sense, but people just need to be reminded of it.
Sure.
So what do you think right now is one of the biggest environmental concerns you guys are seeing at Harbor Wild Watch?
Yeah, so we are definitely an education organization. Yeah. That's primarily what we focus on. And so one of the things that we're, trying to educate people on right now is climate change. It's something that, there's a lot of individuals who are kind of opposed to the science or don't want to look at that science. And as an education organization, we feel that bringing those facts and that information forward is important. Again, trying to get the person that we're providing this information to be able to be knowledgeable and then armed to make a a good decision based on that information. So we talk about climate change in our classroom workshops. Mm-hmm. We have a citizen science program. We're actually monitoring our local beaches and things like seastar wasting syndrome, which is a really big problem. It's decimated. This virus has decimated our seastar population in Puget Sound.
Wow.
And it's been happening since 2013.
Yeah.
And, got a lot of press at the beginning and then every once in a while, but it's still happening today. Just to give you an example, one of our programs, touch tanks, we actually bring live animals out of the water, let people look at them for a couple hours, and we put them right back. And we used to bring out what's called the sunflower star. It's a many-armed sea star. It can have up to 25, 30 arms on it.
Wow.
It's huge. They would be the size of your garbage can lid.
Seriously.
Just massive. Yeah. And we would frequently get those. A lot of people will get them in their crab pots, and they don't like that.
Yeah.
But we'd frequently get those, and we'd have to have a little kiddie pool, one of those kiddie pools.
Yeah.
And we'd have to put those stars in the kiddie pool because they're too big for our tanks.
Uh-huh.
We have not had to use that kiddie pool in 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Because there are just not sea stars that are that size anymore.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I feel like, we connected with another environmental charity, the Nisqually Land Trust, who does protection of salmon along the Nisqually River. And he talked about the salmon population and how two bad years will essentially make two versions of salmon extinct, right? I think that, the entire debate is framed incorrectly because those type of impacts, I think people can see. Like, they understand it. It doesn't, it's not some distant sort of thing. This, sneaks right up on you, and then all of a sudden you have all these different things that are totally tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, I think that's good that your guys' organization does those type of things.
Yeah, and it's in your backyard, too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not in a different place.
Yeah, it's not some historical or future thing that's blah, 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 and temperatures are going to drop or go up a degree or whatever. It's these animals are dying off today.
Yeah, and that I think that's such an important point because it is a global issue, and so I think sometimes people think, well, it's not my problem. That's happening somewhere else because, unfortunately, in Washington, we're probably seeing some of the least of the impacts other than wildfires and things like that, drought.
Right.
But being able to develop that sense of place And this is where I live. This, I care about this community. These animals live in my community. These animals are dependent upon the water quality in my community.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who's affecting it. I think that helps. And then again, if you build that stewardship in, then hopefully they take it to, if they go somewhere for college or if they go move somewhere else, that is built in within them, and they'll take, you know, develop that sense of place in their new home.
Excellent. So, speaking of environmental things, you guys, I saw that you're hosting a coastal cleanup on September 16th.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so can you tell us what happens for a coastal cleanup? Like, what do you guys do? What's the process?
Yeah, so that's kind of an international day where people go out in all different communities and they clean up their local beaches. And so we have a junior naturalist program called Sea Stars and Beyond. And sort of our last group of that program are our teen mentors, our teen volunteers.
Yeah.
And they are very involved in the planning process. We're really in tune with youth voice and making sure that they have leadership opportunities to, you know, pick the types of programs that they want to have, what they want to learn about, what type of service projects do they want to do. So this is a result of our teen mentors coming together and saying, we want to do a coastal cleanup day.
So kids said, we want to do this.
13 to 17.
That's cool.
Our teen volunteers.
Super neat.
And they're organizing all of it. Of course, we'll have a staff. Our science specialists will be there on site. Day of, but they're doing all the organization. They're getting the volunteers. They're coordinating with the different jurisdictions to come pick up the trash and
all
of that. So yeah, it's pretty amazing when you give the opportunity to these kids who have gone through our programs for, you know, some of them 5-6 years, and now it's like releasing them into the world, and they're these amazing agents for change, and it's awesome.
That's awesome.
We have another student who has even gone in front of the city council locally and talked about banning balloons and getting work for that, and she did that all on her own. It was her self-directed service project, and it's turned in from a one-year project to a multi-year project, and she's still working on it.
Funny.
But yeah, they're pretty incredible kids.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was in the military, so we moved a bunch of places, and Arkansas was one of the places we moved, and there was an image of a bird in the water, and it had plastic, like the
rings.
Yeah, around it, around its neck. So ever since I was about 7, it's like, okay, these things, we make sure that there's no big hole, and then somebody can get stuck. Mm-hmm. Like, it's something that, I don't know, like, if you see it when you're young, it impacts you for a really long time.
That's a good point.
Kids are sponges, too. I mean, they soak up all this information. Even our adult volunteers sometimes, because they, one of the things the kids do is volunteer at our public events. So they are not only learning the scientific information, but they're learning social skills, like how to present, how to, public speaking, how to interact with adults, those types of things. And so our the adult volunteers frequently are saying things like, we don't need to be here. These kids know everything.
Yeah,
or the kids are reminding the adults because they're going, oh, my memory's not so great.
And the kids got it.
They've got it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's pretty fun to see that taking on that leadership and the sense of ownership and really running with it.
So if someone decides that they like your organization and they want to give to you, can you talk a little bit about what those donations do for your organization?
Yeah. So we are a small organization. We have 5 full-time staff members and about 60, depending on the year, 60 to 70 volunteers every year. So like you guys, we do a lot with a small staff.
Right.
But these staff members are pretty incredible. So about 45% of our funds come from grant funding. Mm-hmm. And so we're going out and looking for those local foundations to support our programs. And we have some amazing ones like the Russell Family Foundation, the Ben Cheney Foundation, the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation that just are incredible supporters of ours. And then about just under 10% are program fees. So again, I mentioned that most of our programs are free.
Yeah.
Some of them we do charge for, like that longer year-long Sea Stars and Beyond program.
Sure.
But most of them are free of charge. So about 47% of our donations come from individuals from our community.
Awesome.
And so that is obviously a really big chunk of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the grants help us with specific programs. You know, a lot of times programs that are either running for a long time, which an organization's got behind, or new programs that, you know, they want to see, you know, help launch.
Yeah.
But the other things are a little bit more difficult to fund. And one of those is like our Junior Naturalist Training Program. It's a small group of kids, and so, you know, grant funders don't necessarily like it because it's such a small number, but they're getting this really intensive curriculum over a course of a year.
Yeah.
And so donations go to things like that. Donations go towards any programs that we don't specifically get grant funding for that, you know, can be challenging. It also, you know, we're stewards for our environment. I'll try really hard, and so does our board of directors, to be stewards for our staff members. So we want to keep talented individuals doing good work. And one way we can do that is by offering competitive pay and benefits. We were very lucky, fortunate to be able to add staff medical benefits last year, which is great because we had lost a staff member because of that. And as you know, with a small group, when you lose a staff member, it costs a lot more money to, you know, train and do all that. Yeah. And so being able to hold on to great staff members is really important to us. And so those are, you know, just some of the things that those donations help help us fund.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, aside from the cleanup, do you guys have any other events that you guys have planned?
We do. So we actually have our big fundraising event coming up in just a couple of weeks. It's September 14th. It's a Thursday evening from 6 to 8:30. It's in downtown Gig Harbor at the Gig Harbor Marina and Boatyard, and it's called Make Waves. Okay. And our this is the third annual event, and our goal is to raise $20,000. And it's a fun evening with great food, drinks from Heritage Distilling, which is really great.
Nice.
Distillery based in Gig Harbor. We like to stay local. And some wonderful music. And then the evening will actually be a small silent auction and a Raise the Paddle. And this event's going to be extra fun because we're actually having the guests participate and kind of decide where the funds are going to go from year.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
We kind of have a little competition. There's three different programs that the proceeds could go to support, and each attendee is going to, you know, put their ticket in the one that they want to see funded. And so at the end of the night, we'll announce the winner, and it'll be pretty fun. So, you know, we want to obviously educate people about what we do, but we want to also have fun in the process.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So there's that. And then we have two regular programs that are coming up. So one thing that if you want to just learn a little bit more about what Harbor Wild Watch does, and if you're an adult, 21 and over, we have a program called Cocktails and Fishtails. And I brought you your own little tumbler here.
That's awesome.
You're kidding me.
And
so I have socials with Harbor Wild Watch.
That's right. So that's the idea is that every month we bring in an expert from the community to talk about some sort of environmental topic that's going on. Usually it's trying to look at a current event. So we last month had an individual come in and talk about orcas and how sound pollution is affecting their migration patterns and things like that. And coming up on September 20th, which is a Wednesday, we're actually going to have an individual from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife talking about the Washington Mussel Watch Program, which is a really interesting program where citizen scientists go out and they actually monitor toxic contaminants in Puget Sound using submerged cages of mussels. And so it's really interesting. It tells us a lot about what's happening in that particular environment. So that's a really fun program. The speaker changes every time, so there's always something new. And then October 7th, so the first Saturday of October through March, we have our Peer Into the Night program. So we only do those programs in the wintertime for two reasons. We would be out there really late if we did it in the summer because we need to wait till it gets dark. Also, if you're anybody as a fan of scuba diving, you know that visibility is best in Puget Sound in the wintertime.
Okay.
There's not as much plankton. You know, sunlight creates plankton, which creates, you know, it's soupy, right? The Emerald Sea, it's very green in the summertime because of all that plankton and sunlight. It's really clear in the winter, and so you can see a lot better.
Nice. Yeah.
So that one's October 7th. It's a Saturday, and it's right in downtown Gig Harbor. Actually, all of these events are in downtown Gig Harbor.
So the Peer Into the Night is like a weekly?
It's the first Saturday of each month from October to March.
Okay.
Yes.
First Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, hey, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming to the and being on your very first podcast ever.
Well, thank you.
You
made
nailed it.
You made it painless for me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for coming, and we hope that this helps you guys raise awareness.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. So those were our two interviews this time around for Environmental Services. First, talked a little bit about the interview with Julian from Nimi Poo. I thought it was pretty interesting. One thing that I thought was interesting was this idea of sort of tribal nonprofit, geographically diverse, and sort of their line of thinking when it comes to how they are educating people in the environment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the biggest concern, like when I asked that question about the biggest concern being water, like I don't know how that cannot be a major concern right. for most human beings.
Yeah, I feel like, yo, definitely. Like, so I've always thought that.
Yeah, I mean, you hear that yep. kind of idea, like, it's the theory of threes, like, 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have clean water, right. you're done for.
Yeah, and to me, to me, in the past, I definitely have given through my paycheck to water organizations.
Yeah.
Because I do think, like, I do think that it's an issue that everyone goes, yeah, water's definitely a problem.
Yeah.
But then they don't think about it.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember, there was a Bond movie with Daniel Craig.
Okay.
Where, like, one of the bad guy's main thing was he was, like, buying up land. And underneath the land was a bunch of water. He was going to, like, blackmail the world.
Yeah,
and he was
going to
be the
right.
world's sole water supply. And I remember thinking, like, I think the movie was, like, a middle of the road in terms of Daniel Craig's like reviewed Bond movies.
Sure.
I remember thinking, that's exactly what would happen. The supervillain of the world would control all the water because in like 10 years, we're not going to have any clean water anymore.
$1 billion.
That's right. Yeah, I think that water's a huge issue, and yeah. I think that people just don't ever even think about it.
Well, yeah, and that's still something where like Flint, Michigan,
yes.
it's public water coming out of the pipes that you're supposed to get clean water mm-hmm. from. Like, that is part of, I think, yeah. being an American.
Yeah.
You are entitled to clean drinking water, and your government should be providing it. So
yeah.
if they're not, then that's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I also thought it was interesting to hit on the idea of, like, the news cycle.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting whenever we talk to these charities how like, you're talking to people who are taking action after the news cycle
yeah.
is over.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us, myself included, will watch a story. It'll get you emotional in a certain way, and you'll want to do something. You'll be compelled to act in that one moment, and then you
Once
move on to something
gone,
new.
Yeah, it's
and
done.
It's so interesting to talk to two organizations in particular that have people working for it that, like, decided once that stuff was over that they were still going to do stuff.
Yeah, there's still a problem.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So let's talk a little bit about Lindsay Stover and Harbor Wild Watch.
Yeah.
That was a cool interview. I really liked that interview.
Yeah, I can't believe that they have so many programs.
Yeah.
Like, as she said, what, there was 200 programs that were more adults and then, mm-hmm. like, 400 for kids. Like, yeah, we do 600 programs a year.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
How do you do 600 programs a year?
My favorite one, by far, and I feel like yours is probably,
oh, yeah.
too, is the Peer by Night or whatever.
Yeah, Peer into the Night.
Peer into the Night.
I
wow.
cannot, like, I want to take my family to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looks so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, what that is, that sounded like, I mean, instantly adults and kids alike would think that thing
yeah.
is super cool.
Well, yeah, and you don't get to do a lot of stuff at night in Washington
mm-hmm.
during the winter.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's definitely, weather is a
it's
factor.
Colder, it's rainier,
yeah.
and you're just kind of like unpleasant.
But yeah, if you go out and you're, you know, dressed for the elements,
right.
okay,
yeah.
great,
yeah.
but you get to see somebody who's like scuba diving and
yeah.
showing you what's down there.
Yeah.
Because, yeah,
cool.
you can't see through
Because how many
water.
Of us can actually do that?
Yeah.
Right?
So, I don't have a scuba diver's
I think that's very cool.
yeah, certificate or anything,
yeah.
so.
Yeah, and the other thing I liked about it is you and I talked in the open about generational change.
Yeah.
And how this takes time. These guys seem to really have focused on that. And
yeah,
basically
kids.
Reaching out with kids and making sure that the world that they come accustomed to
mm-hmm.
Is a much different... It's a much different dialogue about the environment, about all those sort of things, than maybe the world we grew up
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah. You get
yeah.
to know where trash goes, where
mm-hmm.
recycling goes. You
mm-hmm.
get to learn about composting
yeah, yeah.
and recycle, reuse, repurpose,
yes.
right?
Yeah. And I really liked your story where you talked about, you know, growing up and you saw the images of birds caught in that sort of stuff. Because that's totally true. It
yeah.
really takes imagery. It takes... like your hands-on experience to realize the sort of impact that you have overall.
Yeah, that was the one moment for me where I was like, forever. I will never leave.
You're sitting there cutting.
I will always cut.
Your six rings, yep.
Yeah, make sure there's not a hole so anything can get captured.
So I think that's a big time. And, you know, most people's view on oil, like on the dangers of oil, comes from Exxon Valdez spill or the Gulf spill.
Yeah.
Things that, like, it just presents itself in this very overt way.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Nature has a tendency to do that for people.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and you know, like, right now we're experiencing, like, we're not directly experiencing, but Hurricane Harvey is happening. And it's one of those things where if you don't live in Texas in this area that's impacted, maybe it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it won't be someday.
Yeah.
Because hurricanes move. And if you have water and, like, we're a state that's bordered by a giant ocean, what happens if there's a tsunami?
Right.
Granted, we're not such a big hurricane spot.
No.
Maybe that'll change because of climate change or the environmental impacts.
You have no idea. Yeah. But there's so many other ways that you, like, that the environment could impact you in.
Exactly.
And those sort of things remind us of that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hurricane Harvey, so we want to talk about some events that just happened and some of the upcoming events. We do want to say that, you know, our thoughts, of course, are with everybody who's down there.
Yeah.
We've been watching this now unfold for 2 weeks. You know, the initial damage and devastation that was left that first couple days was pretty hard to watch. It's been also very cool to see people's response to it.
Yeah, you coming know, together.
Yeah, I mean, just monetarily for the CFD, thousands of dollars have come through the relief campaign. We invite people to still go see that. It's online until the 15th. But then also the other stuff you see where people are, like, untying boats and all that sort of stuff. While the media and politicians and folks like that are having this debate over, like, who did it and who's at fault and what happened.
Paying for it.
Right. Yeah. Regular people are literally untying their boats and, like, going into places to save people they don't even know.
Yeah.
And so it's very cool to see. And I urge people who can't be down there to do the same. Try and help save people that you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's
definitely a noble cause.
Yes. The other thing is September is National Preparedness Month. Holy cow. That's like perfect segue, right?
Yeah.
As Heather said, we may not be indirectly ever in line with an actual hurricane, but there are so many other things that can happen in your life, whether they be big things like typhoons or tsunamis or an earthquake, or even small things like the power goes out for extra days of time.
Yeah, or like a river crests its banks.
Yep.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. Our fellow emergency management specialist Jerrica Ferguson will field all your calls.
Give her cell phone number.
Yeah, we'll give out her cell phone number at the end of the show.
Yeah.
You guys can go ahead and give her a call anytime, day or night.
Michael, you can text her.
Michael, you can text her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll probably ask who you are.
Yeah.
Because she's not a sports fan.
And she's a millennial, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, unless it's out on YouTube. She's on YouTube. Yeah. It doesn't count.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I'm sure, like, athletes flying through the air and doing incredible, like, tongue-sticking-out tricks, like... Not impressive anymore.
She's over it.
Yeah, she's over it.
She's over it.
Literally can't even.
She can't even. She can't even with Michael Jordan.
I love it.
So the other thing that just ended last week was the football ticket online auction. It was another big-time success. Thousands of money raised for the 5 Seahawks games, for the Sounders game, and we added the Seattle Reign this year, so that was
pretty
cool.
Yeah, that was super awesome.
It's pretty awesome to see people do that one. Also, on August 26th, we ended the softball tournament. It was great. I mean, I really like to see the concept that they went with, where each team played for a different charity. We're going to make that thing bigger and better even for next year.
I like it.
Yeah. And then, on September 16th, we'll have, the Golf Prevention Tournament. It's getting packed. We actually have a bunch of people who signed up for that. There's still some room, though, so if you want to play, this is really the last golf tournament of the year for the CFT.
Yeah.
Come out on September 16th, support Home for Our Troops. They build low mortgage or no mortgage homes for severely disabled veterans.
Which is rad.
Yes. And then on September 23rd is the Hero Run. And that will support homeless backpacks around Capitol Lake and Heritage Park here in Olympia.
Yeah.
And it's put on by the Department of Retirement Systems. Final thing, it goes a little bit further on into the future, but I do want to say our first week to give is October 2nd through 8th, and that will be anybody who gives $5 through their paycheck or ups it or even volunteers an hour to any of the charities that are in the program gets a $5 Starbucks card.
Super
it's
cool.
It's broken records the last couple of years. We hope to do the same this year.
Yeah.
So anything else you can think of that is on our very busy, full, ridiculously enormous plate?
Well, now we have lunch with Michael Jordan.
Well, we got to schedule that.
Yeah, obviously. With his people.
Our people will call his people.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
We'll do lunch.
Well, let's do lunch. All right, folks. This is Podcast for Good, Episode 7. We'll see you next time.
Bye.